I apologize for going a little bit over tonight. I was probably supposed to stop at 8. Nobody actually told me that, but you know, I live down in Alabama, and this West Virginia air just kind of made me feel high or something. Isn't that what John Denver said? I lost track. No questions?
I was wondering where atheists get their moral set of codes and how structured around them are they?
Well, you know, atheists will say different things in response to that, but generally speaking, they say that their morals come from humans aggregating together and just sort of sorting that out themselves. Do you remember in 1976 when Brother Warren debated who was then arguably the most well-known atheist in the world and most capable, Anthony Flew? He said that the Nazis violated international laws. Just the international community just kind of understands what's right and what's wrong. So they try to say that humans just kind of figure out that it's everybody agrees it's not good to hurt somebody or shoot somebody or harm them. But you and I both know that that's silly. If there is no God, then there is no moral framework, certainly no absolute one. And humans are free to conjure up whatever framework they choose and live however they want. And a group of people may get together and make a law against something, but that doesn't make it wrong just because humans have said it. Okay, what else?
I might be mistaken, but didn't y'all folks put out the Bible bullet thing on CDs for a while?
Did we put out Bible bullets?
Yeah, you still do that?
On our website, we used to have a category called Bible bullets. I don't think we call it that anymore, but all the material's there. In fact, there's probably a bulletin button for each one of the categories where you can get short articles to put in your church bulletin, that sort of thing. But you can use our search engine to trace down subjects. Okay.
Brother Miller?
Yes.
I appreciate your lesson. I hope you don't take this as a criticism. I just wonder maybe if you could respond. I've had some experience with some churches who are very much involved in some of the things you talked about as far as, I guess you call it, you know, trying to save the country and reform the things back to those. And they've done that to the detriment of the actual growth of the church because the preacher and the elders have spent so much time taking groups to rallies in Washington and trying to do those things that the church continues to basically die. I'm wondering if you have any experience with that or if you have any advice on balancing those types of things with local work and if you've, you know, what you might be able to say.
I probably don't have any advice because, you know, elders have certain assigned responsibilities that God gave them and therefore they're not authorized to engage in any activity that would keep them from doing what they've been assigned to do unless they resign and no longer do that. So. It is true that as Christians, we're not to spend all of our time being social reformers. But we're, in my opinion, we're living at a time where fundamental Christian doctrines are being sacrificed in our country. And so by championing those critical doctrines that I think God would have us champion, in the process, we're doing our country good as well. Do we want to save our country? No, God's not asked us to save our country, but it's interesting, the more we try to keep our country intact, the more we will continue to be able to do what this country has allowed us to do for so many years. In fact, I would argue in the last 2,000 years, with the exception perhaps of the first century, Christian missions have been permitted to encircle the planet from this location, from the United States. And isn't it interesting that the restoration movement that says, let's go back to the Bible, was spawned really and really asserted itself in this country shortly after the founding. So if you take the position that even though, so far as I can tell, none of the founders were members of the New Testament church, yet here were a group of men who looked up to God and said, we want to start a nation. We don't believe we have the authority to do that unless it's with your approval. We acknowledge you. They mentioned him four times in the Declaration of Independence. And when you look at their writings, they're just loaded with acknowledgments. One of the books I've written on the subject, Christ and the Continental Congress, gives you all 15 of the Continental Congress proclamations that were issued from 1774 to to 1783, during the turbulent years of the Revolutionary War. Every one of them are loaded not only with references to God, but numerous quotations of Scripture and numerous allusions to Jesus, to the one true religion, to the exclusion of all other religions. They did not care to get in discussions with each other over any number of differences, baptism, Lord's Supper, and so forth, because they were composed of many different Protestant groups. But they all agreed that the Christian religion and its general doctrines, as they called it, its general principles, is absolutely necessary to the formation of the republic that they set up. And therefore, if you and I go down to the local school board, and we stand before that school board and we say, we do not want you to teach our children that we came from rocks, dirt, and slime over millions of years. We do not want you to teach our children that two men can be married or two women can be married. Are we not doing the same mission work that we would do in China or some other place? Are we not standing up and defending doctrines that God wants articulated to the world? And hopefully out of such contexts, as we make progress, we can teach people the gospel as far as teaching them how to be saved as well. But you're right, nobody should become politically involved and neglect the responsibilities that they have in the local church. Probably said more than you cared to have said on that question. Any other questions? Right up here, sorry. Pay attention. How far did you all drive to be here tonight? Well, don't keep us here too late then.
Actually, I'd like you to comment on a statement, Dave. If the church as a whole in the United States was more active on one-on-one evangelism, we were actually out there preaching the gospel, that would help us a great deal in the current struggle that we're in as well. And I believe that's what I just heard you say. Okay?
Yes.
What you were saying is that, yes, okay, we need to be doing this too, but not to the detriment of actually what our primary mission is, which is to evangelize the world.
Right.
You know, and I just thought that would be a good clarification. Okay, again, that's what I've heard you say in the past. And,
right.
You know, so.
Yeah, very well said. Did everybody hear that okay? Very nice. Okay, any other questions? There's one back here again. These preaching students are active, right?
Hi, I'm sorry. I just had a question pop into my head. During your lesson tonight, you were talking about America having a lot of problems as far as marriage. In the biblical sense of marriage, what country has the best success ratio of marriage?
Off the top of my head, I would say America. In 1832, a Frenchman by the name of Alexis de Tocqueville, we probably don't care to hear what a Frenchman has to say, but he and his traveling companion came to the United States 50 years after the founding. You know, when we went through our revolution, within 20 years, they went through theirs, France did. And our founders basically said, hey, you claim to be setting up a republic like us, but won't work there because you have too much infidelity and atheism among your people, too much immorality. The intelligentsia of your society are very atheistic. So they said, you can't do there what we have done in this country. But he came over here and literally traveled all over the United States, which at that time was all east of the Mississippi, with the avowed purpose of trying to see what makes America tick, to explore our values, our institutions, and examine American life. And you ought to go look at some of the material. It was originally a two-volume work. Now it's been put into one, but don't get a condensed one that's been chopped up. Get what he really said. He comes out and talks about this matter, and he says much of America's success is manifested, is evident, from the high value placed by Americans on marriage and the home, mother and father and the children. That gives their civilization, their culture, stability, and it causes the men to go home at night and to enjoy, you know, no matter what the men are out doing in their hard work and everything during the day, they come home And while they're there, they just, it's like heaven on earth. It's amazing how many observations he makes about in how in 1830, roughly, how much our civilization and its progress, its effectiveness, its happiness is directly tied to marriage and the home. And so I would argue that up until the home began to fragment in the 60s, as I said, sociologically, there have been studies done, like Rutgers University has a whole department devoted to this. And they've done a lot of studies to show the ebb and flow of the home and what's happened, and it's dismal. It is dismal. In their last study several years ago now, they said that the average American child who comes through high school, maybe into college, but all through our history, you know, it was pretty quick in there that the next major thing that child would do was marry. That was just the logical step. Said that's no longer the case. And more young people cohabit, and they don't really see marriage as a fundamental pillar of our civilization. And they said there is the sociology evidence shows no indication that's going to turn around. They said the marriage institution, as America has known it, is essentially a thing of the past. Now, I don't know how much we're to believe and how accurate a grasp they have of the whole country, but you and I have well seen many indicators for a number of years now that the home and the family is in trouble. How many of you are old enough to remember preachers saying many years ago, as the home goes, so goes the nation? Okay? Notice how, if you live long enough to see some of those sayings. Question, is the nation in trouble? Yes. Is the home in trouble? So were they right? Is there a connection between those? I say there is. We can look at all the social indicators that trouble us, but how much of it goes back to a failure of a stable home where a mother and father is teaching Bible values to their kids? And you can see, even though we saw that happening in the 60s and heard prophets saying, oh, that's gonna do this to this country, and that's gonna do that, we were like, yeah, probably will, you know, but life goes on. And now here we are seeing like rampant homosexuality. I guarantee you, if you could trace out Ellen's life and any number of homosexuals and lesbians in our country, go back to their childhood, you'll find that they were either abused, the home was torn apart, divorced, there were issues within the home that led to their appetites in adulthood. So the work that's done in these children's homes is monumental and indispensable, trying to salvage some of these children that through no fault of their own are in homes that will ultimately lead them to a horrible life. Is it not the case that we've typically said that the only reason why a righteous God would demand Israelites to go in and kill, wipe out an entire civilization, including the children, is because there would be no hope for those children morally if they remain in that situation? But they would be permitted by God to be in heaven eternally. If there's anything redeeming about abortion, of course there's not. But it is a fact that millions of the inhabitants of heaven will be children. Other questions?
Brother, yes, Miller, would it be a good idea, and if it is a good idea, would it be scriptural for a group of people in the church to get together and be more of an evangelistic way of doing things, is to organize a independent party, what would be an independent party, that is completely focused on Christian views, and people who would have the knowledge of politics and how it works and what we're to look into for the well-being of our country, but look into the Bible and see exactly how we should handle things according to the Bible. And basically, when we get up and teach, well, get up and talk about what we need to do for our country, and people want to come out and hear the whatever political party that you are a part of, want to see this new political party, and realize that, well, this is actually a political party that has Christian views and want to get this country and organize this country under the Bible. Would that be unscriptural, or should that be something that should be done, getting Christians and bringing Christianity into politics rather than bringing politics into Christianity?
I think the formation of such an organization is fine, and I think there have actually been some that have that as their stated purpose. But I wouldn't have it as part of the church. It wouldn't be a para-organization under the church. Just some Christians could get together and launch that. There have been Christians in our brotherhood that have run for public office on different levels of government. And anybody that wants to support and encourage them could do that. I just wouldn't tie it to the church because for several reasons. One, the matter of whether it's scriptural, which I don't think it would be, but also just the idea of the world, if we want the world to vote for such an individual, tying it to one religious group would hinder that. And by the way, that's one of the points the founders made. They said, look, we got Congregationalists, we got Episcopalians, we got Presbyterians, we got Methodists, Quakers, so forth. And we all agree that we don't agree on what we think are serious matters. Isn't it interesting that the denominational world now has become so ecumenical that even though they're holding on to their denominational affiliation, they don't really hold on to the doctrines that made them distinct. And they certainly don't tell other groups that, hey, you know, you believe in sprinkling, we believe in immersion, we believe that's a salvation issue. They won't do that now. So they're really just fragmented and worthless. But at the founding era, they felt, looking at each other, hey, we're right on this and you're wrong and you're going to be lost over this. But their attitude was for the purpose of creating an environment socially and politically for us to be allowed. They said this over and over and over, for us to be allowed to go to our Bibles, study our Bibles, make our conclusions, and then be allowed to worship God the way we think the Bible teaches without any sort of governmental interference. That was their central attitude that they repeat over and over in the discussions. Then I think we could do the same thing just as Christians individually doing that for those who have the time and willingness to do it, then that would be good. Otherwise, most of us are going to just have to make decisions politically based on what's offered up as the best ones at the time. And I think there's a groundswell in our country right now that's upset about the direction our country's going in many areas. So now, perhaps more than ever in recent years, there's more of an opportunity maybe for some good Christian principles to be injected. However, let me hasten to say that as you look back over Bible history and human history, God's never really dependent upon the politicians to sort out anything. That's not going to be the answer to America's trouble. America's problem is not ultimately political. It is moral, religious, and spiritual. And that's where we ought to really put our emphasis. That America's most pressing concern is that a sizable segment of our citizens no longer acknowledge the one true God and the one true religion. Yes, sir? You had a question too, didn't you?
Can you comment on the Freedom From Religion Foundation? And they've been really vocal against the seen Christian liberties. I just wonder if they'll be as vocal against the Islamic religion.
That is the organization that was co-founded by Dan Barker. You remember who Kyle Butt, one of our Apologetics Press fellows, debated about 2 years ago. This is an organization very similar to the ACLU. Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a number of these organizations that have been founded in the last, again, very short period, 30 years at the most, because they clearly have seen that now is the time. American civilization has declined morally and spiritually. There's more Americans that are ignorant of the past and that don't go to church. You know, the statistics now show that more than half Americans do not even go to church anymore. They are churchless. They do not go to church. So look how many children are growing up in our country, never hear or know anything about God through church, through school, or at home. They don't know anything about it. Never heard the name Abraham or Moses or Jesus, other than in a profane way. So the Freedom From Religion Foundation is one of these organizations that says that we need to not allow Christianity to infringe upon anybody in school or anywhere else. And their attitude is that And all of these fly their banner and disguise themselves under the false notion that the Constitution, separation of church and state, is the view that they're advocating. And of course, that's absolutely not true. By the way, at the East Hill Church of Christ in Pulaski, Tennessee, in June of this year, one of the preachers, Robert Hatfield, was invited by the school principal to come to the elementary school and to lead a prayer at the elementary school graduation, which ended in Jesus' name. Freedom From Religion Foundation sent a letter threatening the school district on that matter. So they've invited me to come next month, November 6th and following, to talk about that, to talk about what's happening in our country and what's going on with these organizations that are trying to subvert our way of life under the guise of representing the founders. Just, it's a travesty and unbelievable. You know, they managed to strip all of this out of the schools, so we've raised three generations that are just ignorant of that. The ACLU started in the early 1900s as an openly avowed communist organization to undermine the American way of life. That's not some wacky idea that I dreamed up or that somebody claims. The evidence is all there. That's what they were. And most Americans ignored them because our civilization was still, you know, essentially stable. But now they're having a heyday and using public funds to spread their agenda. And there are these organizations that have arisen that claim Christian connections, and they're going toe-to-toe more and more with the ACLU, and just about every time they do, they win. So the ACLU's just been unchallenged, but now they're meeting some legal authorities that are going up against them, and we'll see how that goes. There's a question right up here, too. I was told not to prolong this too long. I'm happy to do so, but if the elders or whoever want me to be quiet, just say the word. Right up here, I'm sorry.
I'm just going to suggest that maybe you speak on this, that, you know, naturalism is really the worldview as far as our education is concerned. I noticed even in the mid-20th century, and I've been preaching since 1948, and I can know before that, in the schools, evolution-like would be, they'd suggest this is a theory, but after a while that wears out, and now reality is just the natural things. And is that something that has to change people's feelings toward religion and morality and other things?
Oh, absolutely.
It has to weaken something.
Absolutely. You know, 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee, at that Scopes trial, probably 99.9% of the public schools in America taught creation in the Bible. And even after that case, which, by the way, was spawned by the ACLU, you do know that. They were behind that, too. And even though they lost the case, the judge ruled against them, they had an opportunity to have a national and international stage on which to, you know, spew all that stuff out, which, by the way, all the stuff that was permitted to be read into the court record in defense of evolution has all been repudiated by the evolutionists themselves. Can you believe that? None of them argue any of those points anymore because they've all been discredited. But look at the damage that was done. And it probably took another 20 or 30 years for evolution to begin to be taught in the schools right after World War II. And I remember being taught in Phoenix schools as a child in the 50s and 60s. And, of course, it's now gone to seed. You would have been hard-pressed in 1960, let's say, to find a public school teaching evolution. You would be hard-pressed in 2000, what year is this, 11, to find a school that does not teach evolution. How could our civilization be turned upside down on its head in less than half a century? But it sure has. And yes, the toll has been devastating. Because teaching children, shaking children's understanding may be given to them at home, that there is a God and that we all owe our origin to that God who created us as Genesis describes. If you start tampering with that framework and try to convince kids and convince them or at least sow seeds of doubt by pouring all of this stuff into their minds, then you will unbelievably damage a civilization. Now, I may have been out of touch, you know, as a child in the 50s, but I do not remember our brotherhood rising up and doing as much as I think should have been done to combat evolution. We had some fellas. I remember Brother Bales debated on the existence of God. You remember that? And there were some brethren, Clark Braden back way back, maybe late 1800s, wrote a book against evolution. You ought to go look at that. He was a member of the church. So there were challenges to Darwinianism when it first came out in the 1850s, but now we have organizations like Apologetics Press that for the last 30 plus years has been going toe to toe on this. And God has blessed us and brethren have blessed us with support to allow us to produce so many materials on our website that I believe an honest person can look at the data and finally have information that they may not have had ready access to years ago. Now they have very technical information that will help them. We just learned that our website has surpassed the 7 million page hit mark. That means out of probably 150 countries worldwide, we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people accessing this material. Again, God has blessed us. I'm not bragging or anything. I'm trying to alert you and make you aware of this, because I think this is unusual in our brotherhood. We have on our staff of scientists a PhD from MIT in nuclear engineering who works at NASA, writes regularly for us and speaks for us. We have a PhD in mechanical engineering from Auburn. We have a PhD in aerospace engineering from Georgia Tech. We have a PhD in biochemistry from Vanderbilt. We have a PhD in astrophysics from University of Alabama. We have a geologist who has an MA. We had a cell biologist who sadly took a position in one of our Christian colleges that basically said, well, if you're going to come and work here, we don't want you working for AP, because they've had in their history some compromises on creation and evolution. But my point to you is that there is no one on the planet that has any better credentials in science, terminal degrees in science, that can speak on these matters. And therefore, there's no one on the planet, Richard Dawkins or anybody else, who can refute or overturn the teaching that our scientists give that shows that the Bible and science are in complete harmony, true science. So I hope that you will take advantage of that material, both you and your children and grandchildren, and that you'll tell other people it's there. So much of our material is free of charge on the internet, lots of it, thousands of articles dealing with all sorts of issues that are constantly bantied around in the public media that our people need to have firm answers to, and our children need to know the truth on.
Dave, it's time to end this session.
Thank you for your kind assistance.